Top to Arrow podcast 139 from a very swanky executive lounge in a very swanky hotel, neither of which apply to me. I'm not a guest in this hotel. Am I meant to be in this lounge, Ian?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with Ian. Ian, is this podcast 3, 4?
Might be 5.
Multiple.
It's a lot.
Multiple times you've blessed us with your presence. Maybe last time I saw you was in Japan. No, it was in London for the film premiere. But we had a trip. The last trip we were on was in Japan. And before that, the last podcast you were on, we were in Colombia.
Yeah.
I do believe. And Ian is the bloke with the points for those people that left comments last time. Ian works online. Not only is he a day gamer, but you travel business class, you use your points, you collect points. He's a wheeler dealer, but Ian's the guy that helped me with encouraging me to sort out proper flights and how to get a bank card that lets you into airport lounges. But anyway, before we kick off today, it's podcast 139. I'm on my way home from Singapore, and I've just happened to bump into Ian. No, not randomly. I knew he was in the same part of the world, so I'm on my way home. And Ian's invited me into this executive lounge where everything's free. So despite being in Asia, we're sitting in air conditioning, eating nice food, and Ian basically doesn't leave this bubble of a hotel. It's nice to see the local cultural sites, I always think. But today's podcast is on return on investment. Should you give up day game? What are the results you're getting for the work that you're putting in? And why do some people's results differ? But first of all, I've got to give you a dirty trick of the week. I forgot last week. Today's dirty trick of the week, I don't know if you use this, Ian, is to let your phone battery go down before a date. Don't go on a date with a full phone battery. Why, you might be asking me, is because oftentimes you just need to show the girl your phone and say, I need to go and charge it. Or, you know, you want to show her your photos or those YouTube videos. And she's like, oh, let's watch it on the phone. And then you say, well, the phone, you know, it's depleted, so we just need to pop in here for 2 minutes. It's a sneaky trick of the week.
An extra clever trick, actually, on that. So if you didn't want to, this isn't something I've done, I just thought, if you didn't want to have a low battery, because you might need some power, you can just screenshot your front cover when it is low battery and show her the screenshot.
People say I'm a sneaky bastard, but that is good.
2%, love, look, 2%.
Yeah, and she's like, why does it say Sydney, January?
No.
32 degrees.
Well,
okay, I like that, yeah. But I just let it run down before a date. That was the dirty trick of the week. Return on investment. I'm not a businessman. I know nothing about economics. But Ian is an online wheeler dealer businessman. So we thought, let's talk about Ian's stats from last year. Very impressive. And I mentioned them somewhere on my website. And guys were like, fuck off. Or just, fuck. It was either fuck off or fuck. And guys in the past have said about my day game expectations video or my realistic day game statistics where I talk about, you know, 1 in 30 or 1 in 50 or 1 in 100. And guys take this as mathematical, economics, gospel truth. Tom, I did 100. Where's my lay? If only I could show you my inbox. So we'll talk about that. Return on investment being a simple calculation of return, either predicted or we're going to talk about, you know, what you got. So it's your net profit, i.e. your lays, divided by your assets, you know, your what you put in. So for day gamers, that's your total number of approaches. There are guys, and you've heard them on the podcast, with like real micromanaging of things in between. But if you want a really good idea, a simple snapshot of your day game for 1 year, because remember you've got to calculate in the time as well, you just say how many lays did you get versus how many approaches did you do. I had an interesting comment last time I spoke about this. A guy said, do you count an approach as going up to the girl and having an immediate blowout? lots of guys said, no, I don't count that at all. I count it, and I always have with students, if we're doing five warm-ups and you get five instant blowouts, yeah. Anytime you step up to a girl and she notices you,
you've tried.
Okay, if she literally, there was a snowstorm or it was foggy and she didn't see you in the mist or the desert sands, no, but she saw you coming and she just walked off.
That's an approach. You've approached.
That's an approach, so you should, you know, calculate your statistics. Or you should include them. And in a recent video I did, I said, yeah, Daygame's got, you could say, a 97% failure rate if you're a very good Daygamer. Well, that's pretty shocking, but that's the truth of cold approach. And I've made many videos on this if you haven't seen it. One, like I said, is called Realistic Daygame Stats. The other one is called Daygame is Difficult. And I made one a long time ago called PUA Marketing Spam versus Normal Expectations. So, we'll talk about Ian's stats and why guys have differing ratios. And they say, well, I've been doing Daygame as long as Ian, or I've done it for longer. You might remember one guy I taught in New York, he said, well, I've done 10,000 and got no lays. You know, or a guy goes, oh, I've done that, I've done it for 6 months and I've got three lays. And the guy's scratching his head going, or scratching his ass, going, either this is complete bollocks, or, you know, why are these results different? Thank you for the chips. We've just been delivered some French fries. Marvelous services, I could get used to this. Instead, I've opted for a scruffy van while Ian flies business class around the world. Anyway, Mr. Ian, 2017. People have heard a little bit about it if you listen to the Occam's Razor podcast from Colombia, but 2017's over now. So what were these magical stats?
Okay, so I did very little. It's like hardly any day game compared to previous years. It was a big reduction just in the sheer numbers of approaches I did, which for me is part of the key to the success. So I did 257 approaches. I got 128 contact details, which is an incredibly high number close rate, very close to 50%. I don't quite know how I did that. I had 31 first dates, which was a 24% number to date rate for the year. Sounds like date rape, but no, date rate.
No.
Date rate. And slept with 13 new girls, which was 42%. 42% date to lay rate. 10% number to lay rate and 19.7 approaches per lay.
I'm just munching my chips. I might, fuck, they're hot. I might have got that, I might have got that wrong on my blog. Maybe I said 1 in 16. Where did I get that from?
I think you got it slightly wrong, but it was a little bit better at that point because that was a bit, it wasn't the end of the
year. Yeah, true. Okay, but still, fucking hell. If I bang on about 1 in 30, guys are going, well, yeah, holy shit, how long has Ian been doing cold approach? What's the answer to that?
Good question. I think it was September 2014. Yeah.
Okay. And then the other paradox, you just said you seem to do less approaches but got a better return on investment, whereas the guy's going, I crank them out because, Tom, you keep telling me to approach more. And I've had Skype sessions where the guy is saying, I'm getting worse the more I do. And guys that go, what the fuck? Like, you should just get better. It should be linear. It should be return on investment. That's what it should be. So have you got an explanation for, was it an anomaly 2017? I saw you in field. I saw you with girls. I saw you dating. You saw me. And yeah, I noticed your good vibe. I noticed there was something going on with IOIs, if you want to talk about that. You were taking time off. I don't know, maybe it was a glorious year. If you can repeat it this year, I'll quit my job. But what was the secret?
I think there was a few factors. So at the end of 2016, I reflected on the year, and there was very clear patches where I'd had success, and there were clear patches when I'd had lots of failure. And I looked at it and I tried to, you know, why is this? I'm looking at it. And it was all basically vibe and mood. Like, was I actually genuinely wanting to go out and day game, or was it just something that I developed a habit basically of day gaming? Because for the first however long, I went out nearly every day. My routine was get up, have my breakfast, do some work, go out and do day game. And then I got to a point where I wasn't improving anymore at day game, but I was still going out doing it, and I wasn't enjoying it, and it was actually damaging my vibe doing something that I wasn't particularly enjoying. So that was one of the reasons why I was having patches of failure and just general vibe due to other things going on in my life. So at the end of 2016, I decided I wanted to try and, like the Tim Ferriss talks about the 80-20 principle, I wanted to try and find the 20% that got me the 80% of my results. So I decided I was going to day game a lot less. I was going to do sessions of day game a lot less. I was only really going to do sessions when perhaps I'd traveled somewhere new to day game, or I was just genuinely in a good mood and thought, well, I want to bang some new birds. I'm going to go out. And other than that, I didn't go out. I think when you go out to do sessions, the very nature of doing a session is you approach girls that you're not perhaps that attracted to. You're out to day game, so you day game, obviously, because that's what you're out to do. And for me, if I approach a girl that I'm sort of like, yeah, you know, she'll do, it's not there. I'm just not clicking. I don't do very well with girls that I'm not that attracted to. Yeah, so that's something that I've been, IOI thing is, yeah, so I'm aware how I split that down into the, I categorize there as being like three types. Overt IOIs, where she looks at you, maybe she smiles slightly, it's quite obvious. Covert, where she's kind of looking at you secretly, if she notices you spot her, she immediately looks away. And then the subconscious, which is the classic, like brushing her hair, flicking her hair as she walks past you, she's probably not quite aware she's doing it. So if I see an attractive girl coming towards me, I'll line up as close as I can to her, and I'm walking by, I'm looking at her. She might not make eye contact with me, but I'm analysing everything that she's doing, the way she's walking, her hair, anything she's doing to see if there's anything back. And I get a lot of the time nowadays, I will approach, what I do is I'll approach off an IOI, or if she's particularly hot. So I won't just approach off an IOI. If she's particularly hot, two of the hottest girls from last year, there was no IOI, they hadn't even seen me at all, but they were just stunning. So I obviously went and spoke to them.
Yeah. Stop eating those chips.
Oh God, I'm so hungry. I'm like a poor boy that's been let into a banquet, and Ian's just chilling, going, yeah, I had steak for breakfast. I'm like, do you have any chips? Do you have any ketchup? I haven't seen food this good in ages. Okay. Well, like we said, I think, in the last podcast, it's not a good strategy if you're a beginner.
No.
Right? All that stuff we just said about IOIs and taking your time and just feeling the vibe, baby. There's that 1 or 2 years of grinding shit out, and not literally shitting stuff out, but...
You asked whether it was repeatable as well. I mean, I don't know for a start, but... People have asked me if it's, why not do more? That's hardly any approaches, just under 260. Why not do 500, 750? I mean, I could, but I'm pretty damn sure it's not scalable. It's not like if I doubled the amount of approaches, I'd double the amount of lays, because I'd start not enjoying it as much. I wouldn't be as optimal. So for me, that was, at least for that year, that was my optimal level.
What I've noticed with the guys I've taught at the beginning of a session, and the first question is always, how much day game have you done and how long have you done it for? And guys say, 5,000, 10,000. Okay, yeah. And then you say, how many lays? And you do the ROI in your head. Maybe he's never done it before. That's always a shocking one. But you go, mate, this is the payback for all that work you've been doing. Because some guys genuinely hit the streets and they're really dedicated and they buy their proper leather jacket and they, they go on exactly the same street that they've seen in the YouTube video. And they go, fuck, it doesn't work. Like, so for some people, it's a puzzle. Whereas I see these guys... who almost hate it in a way after a while, there's that tiredness and that fatigue. What's missing from many guys we've sat down, and we were just talking about one guy, perhaps we both met, they miss lightness, they miss any kind of fun.
It's got to be fun. If it's not,
it's got to be fun.
It's not.
Yeah.
going to work.
There's that negative feedback loop I've spoken about in the past, where they almost hate girls for it. Like, so many rejected me, therefore, you know, fuck, this one better work, fucking bitch, you know. And you can understand why, if you do something in it, you know. 97% is bad enough for a failure rate, but imagine 99.999. So
I can absolutely understand that. I mean, that's something that I notice more of, that the more like success I've had, the more I'm kind of pissed off if a girl doesn't give me the time. I guess that's kind of an arrogance. It's kind of a confidence that is no doubt beneficial in many ways, but it's also, I don't think it's particularly healthy either.
Yeah, I think, I'm not an economist, quite clearly, but I think is that negative equity, where you're now worse than when you started, despite opening the restaurant and the business, and you know you predicted this glorious thing because you read about it in Street Hustle, and now you're in fucking, you're bankrupt. You know, Tom Terrero's told you to go to Kiev, and fuck me, you're angry with girls. You know, nothing happened, and then I get the email. Why didn't it happen? So what's my first question? Do you think to the guy, if I can't see him? On Skype, I often say, just, you know, turn on the camera for a second, not for a sex chat.
Yeah.
That's later. We both take our clothes off, you know, that's a bonus. Happy ending. But you got to look at the guy. So here's some truths, right, which I have said about in your SMV component. But why do guys' results differ? And you're off. Straightforward with this, in, aren't you? Like, you're pretty honest about it. Like, when you meet a student or a guy doing day game, or a guy writes a post, and you say, "Let's have a look at you, man." So, how does SMV obviously affect these results?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. If a guy is a male 5, and he's just starting out, and he's approaching 7s and 8s, it's not going to have that easier time. You've got to be honest with yourself and know what kind of level you're at, and then through game, hopefully, your SMV should naturally start to increase. Your confidence is going to grow, so that's going to help boost. We're lucky as men that our SMV is more complex. It's not just based on our looks, but looks are a factor. I think it'd be a lie to pretend that they're not. If you're morbidly obese and you've got greasy hair and you stink, you're not going to have much success. You've got to be quite honest with that. Make the best of yourself.
Even like grooming, a simple thing like grooming.
Yeah, I mean, that's the lucky thing with men. What we wear and just grooming can boost our appearance greatly, and then confidence is a massive factor in our SMV. But you've got to be honest, yeah. If a guy is low value and he's approaching hotties, he's going to struggle.
Yeah, you've got to flies. In the documentary Hustle On, there's the plug, Craig tells the story of having a nervous breakdown because he's only new into the game, he was, and then he flies to Belgrade to speak to, like, stunners, quite bitchy stunners, and after the 10th blowout, he goes to the hostel and has a nervous breakdown, pretty much, and flies home the next day. I think he shits in a bin as well. You can ask Craig this, but it's a fucking awesome story. And yeah, Craig's a high-value guy in all senses, but just too overwhelming because he didn't learn day game properly where he was from, and he didn't have reference experiences, and, you know, facing blowouts if you're new, that's quite harsh. So yeah, being honest about your SMV. Yeah, it's about looks, but also you've got, you know, how charismatic are you? How are your basic social skills? I was a primary school teacher, right? I was used to speaking in front of hundreds of parents. I was used to speaking in conferences, right? You've got a business background, but also you've got something social, let's say. Ian works in, like, I was going to say the entertainment industry. But you come from a background of chatting to people and being relatively normal and social, even though neither of us are extroverts.
To an extent, yeah. Although people are often surprised at that because I'm not particularly social, not in groups anyway. I'm quite an introverted type. And it was my early childhood, I wasn't interacting with people that much because I was educated at home. So I missed out on a lot of that. So I was kind of a bit behind. In terms of social interactions and developing that muscle, it took a long time. Like, I lost my virginity quite late and stuff, so it was,
yeah. If you don't know what we're banging on about with the SMV, sexual market value, as Ian said, for a guy it's a lot more complex than just being young and hot. Like, that is a bird's SMV. So just Google my video, I think it's called SMV components, and you've got your looks, which is ascribed, the external stuff, which is being filthy rich, just like Ian, although Ian doesn't use, and I can promise you this, he doesn't use doesn't let on to girls at all about this stuff. And you're not really, this is all points and like, not hustles, but stuff you've set
this
up.
It's a really game trip as it turns anyways.
Yeah.
I'm not attracted to Asian girls at all, so it's...
Join the club, but you just like this lifestyle, but I haven't seen you ever use it for girls, but there are guys that do that. And then there's the learn stuff, which is what we're talking about. But a realistic view of, okay, how is the day game going? And this is why I'm not a big fan of statistics, even though I bring guys onto the podcast that have like crazy statistics. I keep the rough stats, the return on investment, or I ask the student that, because you've got to say to yourself after 6 months of work or a year of work, how's it going? And there's too many guys that go, ah, things all right. And you drill down to that question, how many notches, mate? And you go, oh, I don't know. Really? And he's, come on, mate, how many hours have you put in or what have you sacrificed? So Ian and I were talking earlier over coffee about guys where day game isn't, for now, the best strategy. Again, it's, you're like, what? I should be fucking selling day game. But I've said to students, day game is not the best strategy. I'll start off, and if you want to chip in, mate, because you've met guys where day game isn't the right thing for them, you might be really, really young. I'm not talking six, but I've taught, I think they were 16 years old, these pair of twins, many years ago. They were too young. Guys at university, say, hi Tom, my first year of university, I've just joined uni. How do I day game? You're like, mate, come on, you're in Manchester Uni or you're in Harvard, so social circle, or getting some basic social skills. What other kinds of guys are, you know, perhaps shouldn't be doing day game? If they've tried it, I should say, and the return on investment's low.
Yeah, I don't think it is for everybody. If you live in a relatively small city and you don't really travel much, I think there's going to be better forms that are going to have a better return on investment than day game. It's ideally suited for someone that does travel a lot, like your lifestyle, my lifestyle, or someone that lives in a big city, perfect. But yeah, if you live in a small town or something, then I'm not saying it won't work, but is it going to be the best return on investment? I don't know.
We both know guys where Tinder is a better ROI for their matching their SMV and their attempts at day game, and they show you what they're getting from Tinder, and you have to say, well, nice, man. If that's what you're getting, and remember, game is, she's above your SMV, you could say 1 or 2 points, and she's younger than you, and how quickly did you get that girl? And he says, oh, it was easy, just swiped, and then she came over and we had sex. It's okay, you could laugh at that guy and go, oh, Tinder's, it's not good for you, man, but he's getting notches, they're hotter. And he goes out and he tries thousands of sets.
I think once, if a guy is, you know, really good looking, then yeah, Tinder's going to be great for him, isn't it? If he's,
yeah,
it's kind of a male 10 in looks, then he's going to be banging the hottest girls that are on Tinder.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I can't match with hot girls on Tinder. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Like, the girls won't take the time of day. I don't consider myself to be unattractive. I'm not stunning, but I don't consider myself ugly in any way. But if I spent time on Tinder, I'd probably be fucking well depressed.
And this was tested quite literally with Mr. A, our mutual friend, good old Mr. A, who documents his stuff. He's been on the podcast. And part of his project, we'll get Mr. A on soon, because he's nearly concluded, or he's nearly there with what this project, 52 dates. But anyway, for a time, you set him up with a Tinder account because he'd never used it. We both helped him with his pictures. We got, we did some photography. Yeah. I did some fucking photography, yeah. And you'd think, okay, we changed the age bracket, so he's a successful guy. He should be, you know, reaping the rewards. But what he was getting from Tinder, that terrible experiment, was awful. The ROI was awful compared to...
experiment, though. It was...
proof of day game for him.
Yeah, we lied about his age a bit, made him younger. Photos we thought were pretty good. But he was matching with, you know, girls in their 40s that were not attractive at all, but he can stop girls in their early to mid 20s through day game that are hot and date them. Yeah. So
another type of guy where I've said, do you really want to do day game, is like the 22, 23 year old gym guys, extroverted. I used to have a few on boot camps, less and less now, but when they turn up, you know, really loud party guys, I say, oh, what are you into? He's like, I fucking love clubbing, I love festivals, I love gym. you're like, mate, well, you should be in festivals and clubs, right? And just in toilet pools, like, look at you. Maybe day game, when you're older, because day game really comes into its own in your 30s. It's brilliant. And if you're a bit extrovert or a bit quiet, you like to, you know, wander around alone, it's perfect. But if you're a jacked, really loud 21-year-old, I would be looking at night game or really fast escalation, yeah, and coming back to day game later. So that's another example. Can you think of any more guys where, or certainly taking a break, have you met guys with the kind of their robotic day gamers?
Guys that have done too much and it's not working need to either just give up or at least take a break. Some guys just seem to never take a break and they're just relentless. Yeah, that's the other, obviously the big thing with the SMV. You know, where you go is going to affect that, as we know. You change the marketplace, that can have a big factor in your success rate to an extent.
Yeah, arbitrage, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's finish the podcast with your plans for 2018, Mr. Ian. You change your plans like me, but now I got this fucking van. That was a good way of becoming... I have to do what I've done now because I've spent money on it. So I have to fly less because I can't fly with a van. Certain countries I can't take the van into. But you're, you know roughly what you're doing, or are you going to go on a bender and do more new countries and loads more air miles? And have you got a rough idea?
Well, it's interesting, they do change all the time. When I was in Japan with you, I was thinking, that's it, next year I'm hardly going to travel. Because I had terrible jet lag for like a week, couldn't sleep, and I was like, screw this, next year, hardly going to travel. And then a few weeks later, I was like, nah, next year I'm going to travel more. I think I did 68 flights or something last year, and I thought I might do more this year. I still think I might.
You said you were a bit horny and hungry now after the winter, like me.
Yeah, because I did so little day game last year, and right now I feel quite hungry, and I'm excited for early spring to start. In Europe and get into Europe, I will be going. I'll spend until the summer in Europe. Probably go to Russia, maybe Ukraine, maybe a bit of time in Poland, and then I'm thinking, highly likely go back to South America for a month, maybe 6 weeks, July, August, just to escape that horrible heat in Europe when all the students have disappeared.
Can you throw in a bit about air miles, just very briefly? We'll do another podcast on this because it was much requested. But guys are going, is there a secret to business class? Like, what is the secret hustle? But no, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, there's no real secrets. Anyone can sort of find out the tricks or whatever with a little bit of research and time. Every day I keep tabs on things and know what's happening. I'm fortunate in one extent that one of my businesses I can spend quite a lot of money on credit cards, which earn points. But there are other ways. There are something called manufactured spend, where you spend money on a credit card without it costing you anything. So an obvious example in relatively recent times was the Bank of England produced £100 commemorative coins, and they were selling them on their website for £100. So I was buying like £2,500 worth twice a week with a credit card, earning points. They were being delivered to my mum. My mum would pay them into the bank for me and I'd pay off the credit card. So it was costing me nothing, but I was just putting £5,000 spend through every week. So
proper Dell boy. But then you're with the points, you're, you know, exchanging them for business class, and you do like, not for day game, but you do like occasionally staying in nice hotels, don't you?
Yeah, especially if I'm going to a new location, like the first few days when you get the lay of the land, because you don't really want to book an Airbnb until you quite know the city. Yep. So it's nice to just stay in a nice hotel for a few days, figure the place out, figure out if you want to stay there or not. And if you do, then you know where you want to book your Airbnb.
What's the card you help me with? I'm holding it, but it's called World Elite. This is through HSBC, and when we were in South America last year, or I can't remember when, you said, Tommy, you know, you're an idiot. Like, you know, you're just in economy lounge, you're in economy terminals, and you should be in lounges using their shower and getting their free food. That was very easy to set up. That was just going to your bank and switching money to different accounts. So stuff like that, stuff that I'm lazy to do, Ian's on the money, quite literally.
I mean, another trick with points is the sign-up bonuses for some credit cards. So you sign up, you hit the spend, you get the sign-up bonus, you close the account, you wait the required amount of months to be eligible for a sign-up bonus again, and then you open it again, and you just churn the cards. That's churning, it's cool.
Airline groups, what's that called? You know, Simple, One World.
Yeah, you've got a few different alliances. One World Alliance, which British Airways are in, Qatar Airways, Qantas, I think American Airlines, a few others. So you can book any of those airlines with your British Airways Avios points, the Star Alliance, and the SkyTeam.
Well, here's a little dirty trick. After, Ian fucked me up good and proper, because lounge access gives you free food. So Tom Torero just gets fat on all this free food and sugar and beer. But then I was in a lounge at some point last year with Ian going to Russia, I think, and Ian was just filling up his bag with, like, bounce-back material.
It's like, what, get your bounce-back beers, mate? Just a fridge with beers in it.
Little yeah. Chocolate bars.
Already gone through security, so you can just load up on your liquid. Get your packs of nuts, chocolate bars, tea bags.
Hit the ground, little chocolates, for, you know, saves you a trip to the supermarket. So there we go. We are coming towards the end of podcast 139. I am flying back to the United Kingdom. I'm looking forward to getting out of the heat and the humidity. And the van is about 80% done. Two guys in Cambridgeshire. I wish I could take credit for all their handiwork, but I know fuck all about insulation and wiring and stuff. I'll be doing finishing touches, like, you know, putting a teddy on the bed. But that sounds quite creepy. The van is the whole thing is quite creepy. But when you see it, when you see what it, you know, how I use it, it will become less creepy. Or maybe I'll just own the fact that it's very creepy. I wrote an article how it's similar to Death Proof. Have you ever seen that Tarantino movie? It's one of the most fucked up Tarantino movies, off a double bill, about an old creepy guy who drives. He's a stunt driver, and he's made his car so he can be safe on one side.
Yeah,
but he picks up girls and kills them. That is not, the legal disclaimer is that is not what the van is for. But you're staying around here just to escape the damp for a while?
Yeah, well, I only arrived a few days ago. But I'm already looking forward to getting back to Europe, so yeah, I'm not a fan of the weather or any of it, really. It was just an escape, but
yeah.
It's not that long, and I'll be back in Europe, thankfully.
This was instead of South America, wasn't it? We usually do. The idea is, you know, winter in South America, it's a day gamer's problem, unless you want to go down to Sydney or Cape Town. But not a fan of Asian day game, but thank you for the free chips, Ian, and the free podcast, and for this lounge. I feel out of place, but they haven't spotted me yet. I'm quite smart today, actually. Usually when I go into executive lounges, like the one in Abu Dhabi, in Oman, fucking, you know, boots and dirty jeans, and everyone just looks up, and you've got that imposter syndrome. I am allowed to be in that lounge, but you'll be doing all this VIP stuff, and I'll be in a van. So until next week, when maybe I can pick up the van, or at least go and see how the van's getting on, I'll give you an update. I might release the first episode, by the way. I've been filming loads of clips on buying the van and kitting it out and what's it for. So that's this year's project unveiled. All right, until next time. Thank you, Ian. Ta-da.